Hey, Shopomaniacs, you're listening to another self-isolated episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave. Got kids in the next room. You might be able to hear him, Rupert. With me is Chris.
Yeah.
Sitting comfy in the booth choir. How are you, Chris?
Fantastic. There's an exponential scale of children in this Zoom right now. I have one. Dave has two. And Mark Brabansky,
four.
Our next guest is going to have eight children. It's mandatory.
It's like the Fibonacci of. this is great.
So this is Mark Brabansky. Hey, Mark. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hello.
How you holding up over there?
Thanks for having me. Doing well. Doing well. Adjusting to the working from home, like you said, with the kids and remote schooling and all that stuff. So
yeah, Mark, you're in
Minnesota,
Minneapolis.
Yep. Suburb.
I spent most of my life in Wisconsin, so I just, that's always just near and dear to me. Midwesterners, getting it done.
Absolutely. Building a real business. No VC.
Yeah.
No VC in the Midwest. Come on.
Is that right? Ever? So Mark, you're the CEO of, as you still use that title? I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Owner,
yeah.
Operator, CEO of Front End Masters.
Yes.
I'm sure. Pretty much everybody listening to this show has at least heard of Front End Masters. The URL is frontendmasters.com. You've sponsored in the past, so thanks for your support in that way. Just journalistic shout out there. But of course, we just have Mark on because he's an interesting guy running an interesting company that's at the heart of teaching today's front-end developers what the heck they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I really like to sponsor, you know, things that I actually listen to or watch or read. So that's definitely the strategy there. So excited to support
your work. I like it. So maybe other people like me will like it. Yeah, appreciate that. So, I mean, I guess just what is it? Let's do the 2-minute life story here. Yeah.
Front End Masters. The Cliff Note version is, I spoke at a lot of different conferences. And, you know, some of which you and I spoke at, that's how I met you, I think. Through the time, I really figured out that education is what I really, really care about. You know, I created a bunch of open source stuff, like the jQuery plugins and stuff like that. You know, through that, got to find out that what I really love is education and empowering others to build things and, speaking at conferences and then eventually creating conferences and then trying the whole screencast thing and, those kind of things. But I really felt like I was missing that in-person kind of direct feedback when I was teaching. And so from there, kicked off workshops, teaching workshops, and found out that all these people these lovely people that I've met through conferences could teach specific topics better than I could. So was years of just trying to figure out how to take that kind of in-person workshop, teaching people, getting that live feedback, and bringing that to video. And so, that was a multi-year process. And now it's, a video subscription site and that kind of unique way that we record, I guess, kind of makes the format quite a bit different. It's scoped to like one day, so you get through kind of a broad understanding and still are able to go very deep in a particular topic.
I think I like not to ever be an advertisement, but I think you're right. Like the kind of like workshoppiness of it, because it was an IRL workshop, it is something you can get through in a day, as opposed to not to like some courses I buy or sign up or take. It's kind of like this, 72 hours of video. Okay, good. Let's block off a month to get through it. But this is more like, hey, like here's.
Yeah. Or it's like way too short where it's like not enough context and not enough like telling of the whole story of what you're learning. And so it's, I like our format that you're able to cover a lot of ground, but it doesn't go forever and ever and ever.
I did a Sarah Drasner's Vue course and that was, it was because you walk away and you're like, I know Vue, kind of like Neo, I know Kung Fu.
Yeah, Sarah's awesome.
You're like, I know.
I want to have that moment. I was just writing some Vue this morning for CodePen supporting Vue single file components now. I don't know if you knew that, Dave. It's pretty cool, though. It's just like a special editor that, you know, because it requires single file components like require a little like extra webpack panache. You know, you can't use single file components directly in the browser, which, as we know from this show and talking to Evan Yu, that that's like a first class citizen of Vue, is that you can use it just as a script tag in the client, just like jQuery or whatever, you know, like
Vue.component. And then, but now you're saying I can like mishmash all my HTML, CSS, and JavaScript into one.
Yeah, a lot of people like that. Just bundle it anyway, because then you get that really nice file format. And I think he said on the show that half the people use it in that way.
I think Svelte is also kind of going in that direction as well.
Like, Svelte has like, doesn't it?
Well, it has like its own specific compiler.
You have to compile it.
Yeah, I guess I was just talking about having everything in one place.
Yeah, the single file component deal. Yeah. And I think React is like salivating towards it a little bit. We saw that, was it Timber or there's some logging framework? We're going to have Tom on the show to talk about it. But
Redwood.
They're kind of moving towards an SFC kind of world too, it sounds like.
But yeah, I mean, the fact that Vue, you can load all of that without like a compile stage. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's just kind of cool, you know. But of course, we're just the thing that does require a compile stage is that's we're offering that on CodePen now. Anyway, that's why I was writing Vue, and now I can't remember why we're talking about Vue at all. Oh, it's Sarah took the front end Dave took Sarah's front end master's course on it. And it's just funny how different it is. I mean, we really do need a little training sometimes to kick you off in these new things, because the syntax is just weird enough between frameworks that you're like, man, I wish somebody would just tell me.
For me, it's the economics. It's like, okay, I can go source 12 blog posts and try to make it into one story, or I could pay some money and just have Sarah tell me all in one go, and that's, I'm good. Like that's where like these, I'm a big fan of these online courses. Like bought quite a few, and like it's sometimes embarrassing. It's like, whoa, Dave Rupert is taking like beginner JavaScript or something. But it was just, it's like purely like, did I miss something? Like, I've learned a lot of JavaScript. Did I miss something? Like, you know, I don't know, some array function that would change my whole life or something like that. I just want to know that. Like, those are that's why I like sign up for these education sources, even though I like to think of myself pretty smart, okay, at the web development, but like, there's something to be said about getting it's like you can listen to like 40 hours of podcasts or you could read a book, you know?
I mean, sure. Definitely like a big deal. Like I said, these people can teach better than I can, right? A specific topic. Like I've been in the industry for, you know, over 20 years. I've built large applications in a number of different ways. But having that one, you know, that person that's going deep in one particular area, and they can tell you like the areas to avoid, the things that you should focus on, really like the 80-20 of that kind of ecosystem. I think that is really, really powerful for sure.
Isn't front end masters kind of for Dave? I mean, not for Dave Rupert, but like for people like Dave, that because it doesn't seem like the marketing of it is particularly like, is this your first day are you trying to change your life from being a ladder climber to a front-end developer? Try front-end masters. It's more, it seems to me, I mean, just straight up correct me if I'm wrong, that it's more for people like, I don't know, learning a framework, their second framework or something, than it is like to level up somebody from absolute nothing.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a free bootcamp that we launched. So you can go to frontendmasters.com/bootcamp if you want that kind of early stage, you know, building a couple projects and figuring out if code is right for you or not. But certainly like that core paid service is, you know, kind of, we assume 1 or 2 years of professional experience. We're trying to get you to, you know, that level of senior engineer, that level of, you know, architecting large applications, thinking about, you know, what technology you're going to be able to choose, you know, for your organization and that kind of thing. So the goal is really to kind of upgrade you from junior or mid-level to senior. So that's kind of the sweet spot.
That's unique, isn't it? How often do you think about it? I mean, it just seems really unique to me that there's so many of whatever you'd consider to be competitors that are not focused on the next level. They prefer to stay in that.
Well, the largest audience, the largest paying audience is that really early beginner. because there's just so many people wanting to learn how to code. And so, yeah, if you're looking for, you know, VC money to target the intermediate to advanced audience, it's not, you know, it's not going to happen. So the fact that we're bootstrapped, the fact that we're, you know, I want to do things that are interesting to me. Like, I want to learn from these people. I want to, you know, see these deep dives. It's like, watch Sean Larkin do a bunch of stuff with Webpack. And then, like, immediately after, like, I shipped a brand new, you know, kind of Webpack build for one of the sites that we were working on.
Your own site?
Yeah.
Nice. And
so, yeah, all the performance stuff, you know, we apply the things that, you know, people are teaching about.
I do that sometimes too, where I publish some interesting post on CSS tricks and then I feel guilty that we're not doing it or we're not taking advantage of it in the way that the post lays out right there. I'm like, oh, damn it. Now I literally have to spend the afternoon doing whatever this post says because it's a good idea.
That's right. You have a no inline CSS policy at CSS tricks.
Oh,
just kidding. No.
I was working on an admin page on CodePen the other day and I just went all in. I just styled the entire page with inline CSS. It felt so weird, but I was like, I just felt like not monkeying around with the Rails asset pipelining crap. Is just like, you know what, I'm just gonna, like, it's not that many styles and you can get really far these days with how much control you have with grid on the parent element, you know. Anyway, that's neither here nor there,
like, but that's your style though too, Chris. You just kind of like to bare metal build stuff
sometimes,
you know?
Hell yeah.
I don't know, like, I really liked your
not afraid of
your recent screencast that you've been doing on your, like,
thanks.
It's like,
I just did one this morning. I don't have a day long version of it. Otherwise, I'd sell it to you. You know?
Yeah, I mean, we've been trying to get you to do a workshop for a while, but
I know it's going to happen. I got to do it, especially now that we're someday. Yeah. But, well, I just think it'll work well. Mark has generously not only sponsored this show in the past, but we have he's sponsoring CSS Tricks right now too, which is awesome because I don't have that. I mean, I do screencasts, as Mark knows, and just graciously complimented me on, but I don't really have anything on CSS Tricks that's like, you want to learn X from scratch? You know, like, I've dabbled in that before, but I haven't done that great of a job. So I don't really have anywhere to send anybody to if they're just like, listen, aren't you the guy that, like, teaches people front end stuff? I'm like, tangentially, you know, like, if you Google something, you might learn the answer to your question on my site, but I don't really have training, which is actually has turned out to be fortuitous for me because it means I can partner with people like Mark and be like, go over there and learn. Then when you Google stuff, you might end up back on my site.
Yeah, no, it's that partnership has been awesome. It's just like people land on a specific, you know, article about React and then they want to go learn React front to back. We have a whole learning path, you know, that they can go and learn all the various aspects. Right. So
React's got to be huge for you. Yeah.
Well, actually, the JavaScript fundamentals is kind of our biggest strength because we have everything from, you know, just the kind of basics of the language all the way up through, you know, asynchronous programming, functional programming. And now we just dropped, like, hardcore functional programming where you're, you know, doing monad transformers and all sorts of crazy stuff. So, like, that kind of path of just, like, really, you know, to the metal, building and understanding of the language itself. And then you can apply that to other frameworks. And obviously, we have a bunch of React stuff because that's super, super hot. But, like, me, you know, my focus is always, like, on the fundamentals, you know, but deep fundamentals of, like, the web stack, how it fits together. It's like,
it's nice that you let those principles guide you in a way. Cause if, I don't know, if all you cared about is, like, what's the hottest thing right now, I want to get courses out on that because that's all that matters. And you didn't have a principle guiding you that might get you in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have missed a few things, right? Like, when I saw Redux, I just hated it so bad. I just thought it was just such a bad pattern. And so, like, you know, that it was really popular and, you know, it kind of missed it, right? But we eventually, you know, got some good Redux stuff in there, but then the industry came back around. Now it's like, do as much as you can with these, you know, context APIs that we give you, which I thought is a better approach. And I was like, hey, so they kind of came around, but it was like, everybody was like, Redux, Redux, Redux. And I was like, no, this is so bad. So, I mean, I guess principles can be a failure as well in that scenario. But in general, like, I would say that the internal compass of just like focusing on deep fundamentals and, you know, building out, you know, that understanding from first principles is paid off in spades, because for every one that we missed, you know, the we'll drop a course like JavaScript, the hard parts, or will sentences, really kind of like building your entire, you know, understanding of the compilation phase and you know, JavaScript under the hood and closure and all these kinds of things in a visual way. It's like that is, you know, that's going to be valuable for years and years, and people kind of come back to refresh their understanding of those kind of deeper concepts of JavaScript. And so, yeah, I mean, focusing on that kind of first principles approach is always been my, you know, that's like, it took me forever to allow anybody on my team to put React in any scenario in our website.
Whoa,
in our
really?
Stack. Yeah. Because like, you know, frontendmasters.com.
Just weren't sure.
It's frontendmasters.com is vanilla JavaScript. It's super fast. If you go to it, like the performance is off the charts. It's not loading a lot. It's just, it goes, right? It's, you know, it's built from that first principles approach. But like when you look at an admin dashboard with tons and tons of, you know, functionality and you need to build it out quickly, we're using like semantic UI and React, and it allows us to move really fast in that area. But yeah, I don't like putting a lot of abstraction layers between you and the code. And I just like it to load fast and work fast and not
have
dependencies.
That's the most practical thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, no, the front end of our site that doesn't have that much super detailed interactivity, it's, you know, it's a little blog-like, you know, you click on the titles of things and dig deeper into the site. Maybe React not particularly useful there. And then the dashboard.
Well, I just feel
all
like
dashboards are React.
You know? I just feel like once you start to go down that path, you start to include everything. You're just like, oh, instead of building this, I'm going to, you know, NPM install this and I'm going to NPM install that. And eventually you just get this massive pile of code where it's just like, if you would have done first principles thinking towards the thing that you're building, like even our courses player, it's so, so small amount of code because it's just built from that first principles thinking and like having an architecture that fits our use case and everything's pluggable and we can use it everywhere. We can use it for promo videos. We can use it for the big courses player. We can use it on the back end for QA and editing and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like this tiny little bit of code that just powers so much. And, you know, that's what you get to when you have that first principles mindset and you like really understand the languages and the, you know, the browser and what it's doing. And you know, you're not having so many layers of abstraction where you're just installing everything on a whim and just
the balance though, right? Like the second you need a little more abstraction, you can't be afraid of it either.
Yeah.
You can dig yourself in a hole. Anyway, what were you going to say, Dave?
Oh, I just, that's actually like been my experience this week. Just like, you know, I'm working, but then trying to like do a little side project-y stuff. And then it's like, okay, I want to use like a Netlify's identity system, which is pretty easy to get up and going. But, but like, you know, you read a tutorial and they're like, you know, NPM install React Netlify identity, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, okay, well, I'm not using React. So what do I need to do? So like you're like, I feel like, you know, like jumping in the deep end is like can work, but this tool doesn't work exactly right
with this tool. So you got to put this like glue code in the middle and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know,
So then you just end up gluing crud together and you're like, I'm not a React developer, but I guess I got to be because I want to do a Netlify login or whatever. And like, if you like strip it down, you're like, and this is what I had to do is just be like, okay, what's like the basic like Netlify login? And they have like a script you do and even that's maybe like too fancy. Like, but now I've done the script and it's like, okay, now I'm maybe going to try to roll my own login and see what that's like. And then once I do that, then maybe I can see like what next view Netlify login, blah, blah, blah. You know, like then I'll use the plugin system. Like I don't want to jump into the plugin system first. That's just me though.
Well, that's like your life story.
My life story. No shortcuts. Do it the hard mode always.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Netlify. Maybe you already know Netlify because it kicks butt, that might be a reason. You know why? You know, one of the, I don't know, I guess like the default way I think of Netlify is like, I have a site, whatever, some kind of website, a simple site that maybe I use a static site generator on. Maybe I don't. Maybe it's just flat files. Maybe I'm building it with a headless CMS, or I'm building it in some kind of Jamstack style, or some kind of, you know, front end JavaScript focused style. I don't know. There's lots of different sites you can build. I have a repo for it on GitHub or GitLab or any other Git repo place. And I need it to be deployed. I need to send it up to the internet, a production worthy site, a super fast CDN backed beautiful deployment system. That's what I need. And I don't want to like write my own deployment, and I don't want to use third-party tools for the deployment. I want my host and my deployment to be together. Maybe you don't even think in that way because you didn't even know it possible. That's Netlify. I got this repo. I want to deploy it. You know how I deploy it? I push to master. That's all I need to do. And your site is up. It's great. I use it for everything I possibly can because just love Netlify. It's also so affordable, which is great. A lot of times you can just end up, you're just below the free tier and you can just use Netlify for free. And there's just a few things they charge for. Here's a brand new thing on Netlify that they just announced at Jamstack London is Netlify Analytics. And that's one of the things that costs a few bucks. You want to turn on analytics for your site? It's $9 a month, which is trivial for the good information that you get for it. It's amazing because, first of all, if you didn't have any analytics on your site before, you turn on analytics and you'll have your historical analytics too, because it's based on server logs. They have the server logs anyway, and they can kind of parse them and get the data together for your Netlify site. So it's incredible. Like the day that you turn it on, you have tons of data about the usage of your site. And server logs is the best possible way to do analytics. It's like, you don't even have to care how it works. But the point is, like, it's not slowing down your site for any reason, because there's no client-side JavaScript at all that's tracking anything. It's all handled after the fact and analyzed after the fact. Nothing can block it, which is kind of nice. You know, I bet, well, I don't know, maybe every single person listening to this runs an ad blocker of some kind, and a lot of them have flipped on blocking Google stuff like Google Analytics. Like, just don't let it run at all. Google Analytics is the big player on the block, and now that data is totally missing from that analytics. That's a big deal. People that just turn JavaScript off for any reason aren't tracked in that way. This data will be way more accurate. This is the most accurate analytics you can possibly have for a site because of how they've done it. So anyway, it's great. It just feels really Netlify-y. You get good data from it for any reason you'd want to use analytics. So I don't know. Just check it out. Netlify Analytics. Good job, team. Love it. I got another one. Just yesterday, we're working on redesigning and rebuilding the asset hosting feature of CodePen, which is cool. It's like kind of bad right now. Like, it's functional and you can upload files and use them, which is the crux of it. But there's just so much. The world has just moved on, and as far as like the how good you can make that experience, and it can be a lot better. So we're doing it, and we had a fork in the road. Two different forks in the road where we took different forks. For one, we ended up picking this software called, sorry, Mark, this is just, I'm just taking us down a weird road here. Yeah. Called FileStack. Have you ever seen FileStack? It's like a freaking super nice uploading experience that it's like drag and drop. They have like a React component, but it's just vanilla too. And it's like, if you want to upload a file, you could build out your whole UI, or you could just like load this thing. And this thing is like so wicked, fully featured uploader machine. And there's other competitors, or there's freeware and stuff, but they do such a good job that it's like, sometimes it just makes sense to use the thing that just kicks ass at this one job. Fine. There's that fork in the road where, instead of rolling our own, you know, we're removed thousands of lines of code to use some other thing. But that, you know, so that's the like, I did the opposite of what Dave would normally do, I guess. But then we're like, you know, we really need like good search for assets too, because theoretically people have tens, hundreds, some of our users have thousands of assets. They need to search through and find them. Search can be easy or hard. You know, you could just, like Mark was going to, you just say, I don't know, npm install search thing. I don't know. There's probably something that does a good job with this. And our assumption while building it was going to use this thing called Fuse.js, Fuse.js. And it kind of looks awesome. It's like a really well done kind of like just npm install it or even just use it in the browser search library. And, you know, some of its core functionalities, it can do stuff that would be hard to write from scratch, like fuzzy search, you know, like when you spell something wrong, it still finds the thing that you spelled it correctly. But we're like, we don't have a lot of evidence that anybody needs that. Plus, it's meant to like deep search within like JSON records, where we're like largely just searching the name of a file. Like there's nothing deeper to search than that with an asset for us. So like writing like a couple lines of code in raw JavaScript, that's just like, I don't know, just match up, lowercase the string and filter on that, you know? So it turned from what could have been tens of kilobytes of JavaScript to power search is now like a couple of lines. And that's the other fork in the road, you know, don't NPM install something. Depends on which fork you take.
Well, and then like when you install that big monolithic thing, it's like, yeah, it does that thing well. And now you're operating with the confines of like what configuration they have. And like, then you're building your stuff on top of their APIs. And then when you come back to it 2 years later, 3 years later, what if that company is defunct? Or, you know, you do NPM install and Right. Now all the APIs are different. And the thing that you were doing in the past doesn't work today. And so I don't know. I've been bitten so many times over the years over that kind of stuff. So I think Frontend Masters, like as a company, we're very much, yeah, build it. You know, if we have to use one little library, fine. That's fine. But like Right. Build it. And then when you come back to it a year later, you know, some part of the code that you haven't touched in a while, it's like there's no NPM install. Like it just works and just everything works. And you can just open the file, write your code, and you're, you know, done. And it's like I built this dashboard system, you know, in like a couple of days because I just like imported the JavaScript that I needed and then just dropped in like it was like 50 or 100 lines of code. And I basically pulled in all of the functionality from the site into like one user dashboard. And it took, I mean, it was scary fast because it's just like it's all just little JavaScript modules. You include what you need and then you're good. It just works.
Yeah. And is it part of that probably comes from the age of your company or knowing the experience that you have and the length and that the fact that you want to be around 10 years from now and stuff.
Right. We're not built to sell or something like that.
Yeah. Like, so this, you know, we picked this file stack thing because it just seems like industry best of kind of uploading experience and you have a lot of control over it. You can just throw that script on the page and it'll upload a file and it'll put it on its CDN for you. And you're like, how cool is that? You know, like I literally spent 5 minutes and now I have an uploader thing, but not only it doesn't upload, it uploads to them. But then as, you know,
your S3 bucket.
Well, of course, it has all that capability, though, you know, but it's probably, you know, I don't know, 10x more complicated, not more complicated, but it just takes you longer and it's more fiddly and stuff to get it uploading to an S3 bucket. But we have to do that. I can't choose FileStack and then be like, just use their CDN, whatever, for our user-hosted assets. Like, that's not an acceptable thing Right. Because it's like, who knows what happens to that Right. Company? It looks good now, but who knows?
I mean, even the tools that we use to teach, right? It's like, we used a thing called Plunkr, and it's like, it was down for a long time, and then who knows if it still exists or whatever, you know? And so, like, we use CodePen a lot. For a lot of our stuff, because we know it's going to be around for a while, right? Right, Chris? Right?
You're goddamn right. Okay. It is. And so, but right.
And even longer after it sells to Microsoft. So just
like, I wouldn't blame you at the same time if you looked into something. I'm not telling you to switch. I'm going to keep this damn thing alive for the rest of my life if I can do it. But I don't, you know, having that kind of mental process of being like, what can we trust and what can't we is a big deal. You know, we're uploading to an S3 bucket. That's just, there's still an assumption there. The assumption is that S3 buckets stick around forever too. Now, that seems like a safer assumption because Amazon is just so giant and yada, yada. Like, at some point, you got to just place your bets.
Right. Yeah.
But place your bets in the places that feel instinctually good to you and that there's some proof that are good. And I hope to prove that every day at CodePen. I'm proving it by doing it. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we use AWS as well. But like even our infrastructure code or, you know, our backend code, our APIs, it's all Go. And it's, again, very minimal libraries. And so, it's just incredibly scalable, and we keep building all this really complex stuff on the back end on, you know, again, first principles, really simple to the metal code. And, you know, just kind of that kind of mindset is on the back end as well as the front end. And so we're able to build, you know, incredible stuff like QA tools, custom processes for production. Like I said, our courses player is custom. And now we're building like a whole custom codec pipeline, which is going to reduce like our videos by like 90% and up the quality.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it's just, I don't know. I just really, really like that first principles thinking long-term, building modules that are with minimal dependencies and just kind of, but yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting that you're in Go. My co-founder Alex is all writing all a bunch of our crap in Go and he just like can't shut up about it. Just freaking loves it so fast.
Yeah. That's our CTO. He's kind of like my exact counterpart in the back end. Like everything that I care about on the front end, he doesn't care about. Everything he cares about on the back end, I don't care about. And so it's like just, you know, and we've worked together for like, man, it's like 15 years now we've worked together on, you know, through, he hired me originally on some consulting projects and then I hired him and then eventually built Front End Masters and he's our CTO. But he really, you know, has that exact same approach on the back end. Whereas like, other engineers, why don't we bring in this other thing? He's like, well, you know, it doesn't fit our use case. Like, just build the thing, just do it, and now it works. And it will work forever, and we can build on top of it. And it's, by the way, it's like, you know, X amount of times faster. And so he's the exact kind of mindset of the back end, you know, as I am on the front end. And so it's really fun.
I have a friend who does a bunch of back end stuff, and he was sort of saying like his last 5 years of his career has been like dependency hell, you know, like just managing dependencies. Like, oh God, that one broke. That's a fire. So he's kind of been stripping us down to like, we don't do like mega dependency trees, you know, like his kind of architecture sense has been built off of like, oh, I've seen that go really bad. So you scale it down. You build your own thing, no secret black boxes, all that.
So. Absolutely. Yeah.
That said, this file stack looks good, Chris. So.
Oh, God. It's pretty. Just try it. It's amazing. I mean, just for the people out there, too, it's not only like you get this uploader that then is just has really good like drag and drop support. I mean, just that alone, like try to hand code a file drag and drop. It's not, you can do it. Like we have it live in production on CodePen right now, but it's a little buggy. It's a little pain in the ass. It's this to get it really right is hard. I'm all about abstracting that problem to somebody else. But it's not just that. Then you upload an image and you say, oh, how about you just open the cropping tool? Why don't you crop it right while you're in there? Or why don't you optimize it while you're in there and make sure it's being served in the right format? Or how about you upload it from Dropbox? So just here's a Dropbox file picker right inside of it. And you just get all that for free. Come on. And that's like a tenth of it. And then you send it through a workflow on its way out. And the workflow is like, okay, well, it needs to be 600 pixels when it's put where it is because it's being used in this email, whatever. And, you know, apply a monochrome filter to it and then put it in this S3 bucket, but run it through this other service first. You know, it's just fancy crap like that. So it's so cool.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by AWS Amplify. You know AWS, right? Amazon Web Services. It powers most of the internet, it feels like. There's a ton of things that go in the AWS bucket, like EC2 allows you to like spin up servers of your choice and has all kinds of configuration. And like S3 is for file storage and Lambdas is for running cloud functions, all kinds of stuff that individually you can set up and use and are great. But there's so much more than that. You know, there's a ton of different things AWS does. AWS Amplify is kind of a package of tools to help you build full stack apps for the web. So it's like, I don't know, just give me the stuff that I need that usually you need to build an app. So Amplify is hosting. You need web hosting, it's got that. It's got authentication for logins for your users. It's got GraphQL as a first-class citizen of it. It's got serverless functions, like I need, you know, the Lambda thing. I want to run some code in the cloud to hit APIs and do whatever else I need to. And it's got file storage if you need it. It's got some machine learning stuff in there if you need it. So Amplify is this, you know, easy-to-use full-stack framework for getting started quick with building web apps. It's really cool. The auth stuff alone is cool. It's just a few lines of code in there. GraphQL has taken over the world of how to get things from a database, put things back in a database, really front-end development-friendly way to do database stuff. Love GraphQL. It's just built in as a first-class citizen. It's the scalable API. You don't have to provision your own servers. It just does it up for you. Pretty cool. So AWS Amplify is really cool. Definitely worth checking out, especially as a front-end developer. So check all that out.
Okay, just to talk some questions for Mark on the way, I would assume that you get some pressure from multiple sides on what to do next. Although it sounds like you have an awful lot of direct control over what you're going to produce next. But and I would assume those two pressures are like from companies. Maybe they're already your customers, or maybe they're people just kind of suggesting to you that this is what they wish developers knew. And then the students themselves that want to know specific things. So where's most of that come from?
Yeah. Well, since we're pretty much, you know, a business term, B2C, like, you know, directly to our customer, no, like we do have like, you know, maybe 1,000 teams on there. So there is quite a few like large companies on there as well. But primarily, you know, it's developers that are subscribing out of their own, you know, pocket. And so they definitely like will, you know, be very, very active, like in support. We have like a question mark on the site of people can talk to us. I mean, we've had tens of thousands of interactions with customers. So we're very like, even the developers do customer service. So it's a collaborative effort, talking with people and fixing the site and taking their needs and putting it into the platform. And so we're really, you know, everything that we do, like our roadmap, everything is taking into account like those, you know, tens of thousands of conversations, whether it's, you know, things that we record or features we add. It's like people are asking all the time, like, you have so many courses, how do I, you know, pick which one is right for me at the time? And so we put together the learning paths, and those learning paths are curated paths through our courses. And that like solved just an unreal amount of support requests. And now we have a lot of stuff with team billing and all that kind of stuff. And so we're building like our team management process, like from scratch, you know, from first principles, everything is custom, everything is, you know, and so it's going to work like really, really smoothly for, you know, being able to onboard your teams and that kind of thing. So it's a, you know, I know it's a roundabout way of answering your question, but the point is like, you know, talking to customers, hearing their needs, I mean, they'll ask for something like, you know, thousands of times. And, you know, it's, for me, it's like, you know, we do have a couple of advisors who also are teachers, and they, you know, we kind of review, you know, open proposals, but we'll get, you know, hundreds of proposals for every, you know, 5 or 10 that we record. So there's a lot of inbound interest from teachers. I wish we could record them all, but I think it's a mix of like who is well known for that, who is really kind of has a pulse on that particular community, and then the actual demand for the topic. And so there are things like accessibility, which I find are really, you know, important that we include in the library. And, you know, I think are important, as well as, you know, like design for developers, these kinds of, you know, topics. But they're, well, yeah, that was Sarah Drasner, so her stuff is more popular. But I would say that like there are topics where, you know, doing that first principles thinking, like maybe they're not going to be the most popular, but they'll live for a really long time. They'll be really valid for a really long time, and they're important. And I think they're important. So yeah, it's definitely, we're like maybe on the slower end when it comes to like the latest hot new like Redwood framework or whatever, you know. Awesome. That's cool. Like screencast sites will go crazy on all the latest, newest stuff. And like, I'm waiting for that like production story. It's like, would I recommend that somebody actually go through the time to learn this, to build this, like in a production sense? So, you know, a lot of the things like even like everybody had hooked stuff before us, but then it was like, no, we're going to wait and see like until it's really like in production. There's a production story. It's not beta. It's not alpha. It's not whatever. Like, okay, now is the right time to do, you know, a full, you know, hooks training or a full, whatever.
And that's so interesting.
It's a little bit different mindset. I'm not going for like,
you don't think that slowness has any negative business impact. This is a cliche example, but it's a little bit like Apple, right? They're never first out of the gate, but they're like, once they weigh in, then you know that that's like important. Exactly. Or that they're going to do it well or whatever. At least that's the cliche.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll never be the first out of the gate to get like the latest suspense thing in React or whatever. Like you got to wait. I don't know. We've got to wait until like there's real companies shipping large scalable, you know, apps on this stuff. And then we'll do the latest, hottest, newest React thing, right?
Yeah, like I how do you deal with like old libraries? Like Vue, I know, is going to make a jump from like 2 to 3, and it's probably a significant enough change. Or React has hooks now, and everyone's supposed to be doing hooks. You know, how do you
with a
like handle these sort of stale
things? Yeah, I mean, with the hook stuff, and even with like state management. Just in general, that problem in React, there is the class-based version that a lot of companies are deploying and have deployed out there. And so we do have to cover that in our state management course, both ways of here's how you manage state and set state, here's how you manage it with hooks, and, you know, kind of covering both paradigms with, you know, you don't have to take the entire course, but if you want to understand the entire surface area of managing state in React, you need both perspectives. And so with Vue, your example, or coming back to your example of Vue, you know, Vue 2 is a stable API. It's a stable set of APIs. And so we're not going to do a Vue, we're not going to worry about that course of like updating it every 6 months or something like that. But now that Vue 3 is getting to the point where it's people are using it and they're using it in production. And it's getting to the point where, you know, there's enough community adoption. Like at that point, once we see it in production quite a bit, and, you know, we're in touch with the team, we're in touch with the core team of like all of these libraries. And so, Sarah Drasner,
that doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Sarah Drasner is on the Vue team. And so, she says that Vue 3 isn't ready, which she did. We set the date, we were going to do the training, and she said, it's not ready, you know, and we set the date and we're going to do the training and we said, it's not ready. And so, yeah, I mean, to your point, Chris, it's like from a business perspective, you know, in the short term, does it hurt us when, you know, floods of people go and learn the latest, hottest, newest thing on the next, you know, on whatever screencast site or, you know, on Vue 3, people are doing stuff on all of these screencast sites, but we're going to be a little bit behind them, and that's okay. It's like flood, learn all the latest, newest things. Great. But like we have companies that are relying on us for their, you know, their production decisions of what stuff they're going to build. And it's not just companies, but individual careers. And I think it's really, it's great to experiment with the latest, hottest, newest thing, but you know, it's the bleeding edge, right? And it can cut you. And I don't feel like that's a responsible, approach to education. It's just go, 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 just put it out there and let everybody flood and like, oh, make the money. Like, it's just, no, like that's not real development. That's cool for side project development or little things or like brand new, you know, startup ideas or whatever. If you want to do that, great. But like, you know, these are, you know, engineers at all of the top, pretty much any company you use their product, we have customers there. And it's
sort of saying that some education can be dangerous, that it can be detrimental.
That's how I feel.
Like if you... Yeah, that's wild, though.
That's absolutely how I feel. I think it's irresponsible to be out there and just be like, no, this is ready today and like, check this out. And it's, you know, just for views. And it's, I don't know. I understand it, right? Everybody's got to make money. Everybody's got to get an audience. Everybody's got to, you know, go for it. But, you know, so I don't, you know, I'm not trying to put other people down, but at the same time, I'm just saying our approach is a lot more laid back, watch the community. Is the community adopting it and building real apps? Is there a real production story? Okay, now let's now let's dig our heels in. And
it might be the difference between long-term and short-term plays too, you know, like that's your philosophy to development, but then it leaks its way into being that's your philosophy for the business as well.
Exactly. Right. Like zero people have left the team. Like when we hire somebody, I mean, not to say that ever not leave at some point, but I mean, the point is like when we're thinking about a new hire, we're not, oh man, this person's going to come on and then they're going to leave in a year. So we got to get them in there and building stuff and as fast as possible and extract as much as possible. It's like, no, like let's like have a really awesome, epic set of like benefits and let's really think about and take months to like, you know, talk with people and figure out the right role. And then let's like enable them to really feel like part of the team. And so it's not, you know, it's not just like people building little small one-off things. It's like everybody has a massive impact on the company and are taking large chunks of the business and of the software and building it. And everybody in the company can write code, even down to our video producer who said he would never write code, like, you know, was able to write some CSS to adjust like OBS's, you know, software. So we have the right configuration for our buttons and stuff on the video software. And so, I don't know, it's just, yeah, like you said, that long-term thinking about every aspect, whether it's the education, wanting the courses to live a long time, whether it's the team, whether it's, you know, the teachers, or even the things that we sponsor. It's like, we've been sponsoring Cooper Press, JavaScript Weekly, and all that kind of stuff for, it's almost like 7 years now. And that kind of long-term thinking, I think, I don't know. Unfortunately, like not everybody can operate in that environment because a lot of the things that, you know, we're building as engineers are being built to sold, you know, sell like VC backed, like go, like use whatever, get it out there.
So it sounds like a confident business strategy for one thing, but yet at the same time, you write blog posts that are like, hey, my plan is to try to not screw up. And, you know, I'm sure you have a healthy level of worry about this, like we all do. Right?
Yeah, I mean the current situation is really interesting because, you know, our entire model about the way that we record is relying on, you know, this nice in-person studio with all this equipment and the people in the, you know, people in the classroom and interacting with the teacher, mm-hmm. and so we're having to build basically the business up from the ground, you know, the entire way that we record. And this team that I mentioned, like everybody's here for the long haul. And so we're thinking like long-term and we're building like the most epic production setup. It just looks amazing. And, you know, it has all the characteristics. You'll be able to...
What are you going to do? Get a box together with all this like tripods and cameras and stuff and ship it to somebody? Here, you set it up.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's a massive, you know, it's like basically you have to build like, you know, walls behind you and there's a podium and then there's, you know, all of the lighting is like mm-hmm. tweaked and, you know, we've got CAD model of like where everything needs to be. And, but like as an instructor, like the instructing experience is you plug in via HDMI and you teach. Right. And then and that's it. And like you focus on the people that you're teaching. And so that's really what we're bringing to this is like, you know, we have a laptop where, you know, included in the kit is like all the production equipment that does everything locally. And so that we're able to run the show and, you know, be able to manage the whole AV stuff remotely.
So it's useful now because whatever coronavirus, but do you think it's going to continue to be useful after that has passed and that it'll be like you might get some teachers that you couldn't have got otherwise just for business reasons? They're like, I don't know. I don't feel like coming to Minneapolis. So sorry.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Like the, you know, especially the international audience, it's a little bit more cumbersome to fly, you know, 14 hours to the studio. And so I think especially there, like, but this has been in the business plan for 3.5 years to have this remote, you know, recording set up for various reasons, being able to try things and do a lot of these trainings before coming and doing the full in-person studio. you know, that was kind of the plan for years and years that I pitched the teachers, and they just, you know, really wanted the in-person experience. And I think there's a lot of benefits. You know, I don't want to promise on a, you know, on a podcast, you know, our future or whatever, or pigeonhole us. But certainly, like, this is stuff we've thought about for years and years and years. It's just that having this environment, you know, kind of continues to accelerate things, you know, in that direction, where now our in-person studio is shut down. So we have to completely go all hands on deck, you know, all our entire team and, you know, all of our infrastructure. You know, we're taking, again, that first principles approach to this. And it's looking really good, and I'm really excited, but certainly it's super unfortunate circumstances that this is, you know, what's forcing us to, you know, to move in this direction. I wish it was kind of like,
I don't know. My gut feeling is it doesn't sound like much of a gamble. I mean, you know, 10 times more than I do, but it's like you were planning on doing it anyway. It's on the surface seems like a good idea. It just opens up doors for you. It's a lot better situation than if you sell burritos, that's for sure, because you're kind of screwed right now. You know, at least this was somewhere near.
I never like to be forced, you know, like having that long-term, you know, kind of mindset. I never like to be forced and be reactionary, right? It's, right. You know, I just don't, like, I don't make the best decisions when I'm reactionary. And so the thing that gives me peace is, like I said, that it's been on the roadmap. It's something we plan to do anyways. Now we're just, you know, we're executing on it today rather than in a couple of years or 2 or 3 years. And so, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for us is, you know, are we able to educate more people more deeply? Like, that is the mission of the company. And, you know, numbers have never been higher as far as people using the system, you know, per user. It's like up 50% per user. Like, I mean, people are using the heck out of Front End Masters right now. And so our mission is able to, you know, continue to educate more people more deeply. And that's super, super awesome that we're able to, you know, like you said, if you're selling burritos or something, you know, and your mission is related to like food quality and delivering the best burritos or whatever. But like in our case, delivering education, educating more people more deeply, like we're able to do that in this environment. And, you know, we'll create new ways and innovative ways of being able to produce that result of educating more people more deeply in this new environment. And so for us, it's no matter what happens, like that's the mission. We're doing it. We're continuing to do it. And that's our measure of success. And so,
yeah. So what's coming, man? What do people want? And what are you going to do? Do you have any interesting news to drop for upcoming courses or?
Well, right now it's completely all about this new production process. So, I mean, our first test is going to be, or I shouldn't say test, our first run, it's not going to be a test. It's going to be a production run. We'll be with Brian Holt, since he's, you know, been training with us forever and, you know, has a lot of popular courses. He's a really fun one to like work with on new stuff. And so we're going to be doing, building a digital pet game again. First principle was building, I think he's going to build it in React, but it'll show like a demo of how to assemble this stuff together. And then we'll give the assets so people can, you know, build their own version of the game in whatever technology they want to. And so that'll be a fun new experiment. But yeah, we have all sorts of stuff lined up. Like state machines are big right now. People are, you know, it's kind of an old concept, state machines, but people are applying it with XState and being able to visualize your, you know, state machines and that kind of stuff, which is really, really interesting. You know, obviously Vue 3 is big. We just dropped, you know, machine learning, which was totally new for us, and it's on Python. And
interesting. Those seem big enough to be up your alley, you know. It's still new, but it's not, you know, it's so big that it's like, that's gonna stick around for sure. And I can imagine something like state machines, who, I don't know what your three understanding of them is, but man, if I read about them, seen talks about them, edited blog posts about them, like I feel like I've spent plenty of time with state machines, and I'm still a little like, I don't get it. And so a good course might be the thing that cracks it. Or I could see that being like, I don't know.
I mean, David's going to be building. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No.
He's going to be building the state machines with pure JavaScript. So before introducing other libraries. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. I just mean, that's like the moment where you're like, I don't know, maybe your company decides that you're going to start using them and you're nervous for a minute. Like that might be a trigger pulling moment for you buying a course like that. Be like, okay, I am actually going to sit and learn this for real, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's where all this like online education stuff, like an actual course, not just like 20 YouTubes that I watched in a playlist or something. Seems valuable because I do client services. So I'm on a project for however many months. And then I like that project ends and I take a deep breath. And I'm like, oh God, what do I need to know next? Or something like that. Do you have a way to answer that question? Like, what do I learn next? Or
yeah, that's where the learning paths come into play. And so if you go to frontendmasters.com/learn, you can kind of see, we have like, you know, a beginner path, professional path, and expert path. And that's kind of like, in general, the best practices of the day, kind of like interweaving everything from, you know, CSS to JavaScript to React to, you know, TypeScript to all sorts of stuff, right? Like the entire industry. Whereas like we have specific learning paths, which are dedicated to like just JavaScript or just CSS or just, you know, individual things. So yeah, the top paths, like, yeah, if you want to learn full stack, like there's a path for that. Or if you're a designer learning to code, that's like a specific path. And so those kind of higher level paths encompass all of the technology. And then like the specific deep dives are into like very specific like frameworks or, you know, languages or whatever. So we'll be continuing to build those out. I'm excited to build out, like we actually have several Python courses now. You know, we have several GraphQL courses, so that can be an entire path. And then we have an entire, like, whole library of functional programming in JavaScript now, from like basics all the way up to the hardcore functional, you know, kind of Haskell style functional. And so, like, as we get enough courses that kind of fit together in paths, and we kind of talk to the teachers of like, this will be before yours or this will be after yours, and like, so that they can kind of like make sure there's not too much overlap. Some overlap is okay, but to build out these learning paths and putting them together also like expose that, oh, we have this hole here. Like I feel like our CSS stuff isn't fully comprehensive. Like I really want to build out, you know, a full kind of nuts to bolts all the way to building, like, you know, we just did a pattern library, you know, design systems. Yeah, it used to be called pattern libraries. Now they're called design systems, but like a whole design.
I don't know. Careful there, Mark.
Okay, that's not my area.
Did you try style guide?
Whatever. So design systems, we just recorded it. It's not out on the site yet, but it's cool, like what people are doing with Storybook and, you know, componentizing all of their kind of designs to HTML. And so I think, yeah, it's interesting to see it with those learning paths, like what our gaps are. And I feel like I'm very well aware, or like, you know, our customers will write in like, I went from this course to this course and there was this giant gap and I had to learn over here. And so like, we're constantly like reassessing and making sure that things are, you know, up to date. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing you say is you need two people who are pretty good at CSS to fill in some CSS gaps. Is that right? Is that what you heard, Chris?
Yeah, this whole podcast is actually a pitch for y'all to come and teach.
Yeah.
That's the only reason.
I really want to do it. I'm just nervous that I don't have like a thing to teach people right now. Like I know, like just like day, I know tons of crap about building websites. And I teach people about it, but I teach in these little bite-sized chunks that workshops always make me feel nervous. I'm like, I don't know if I have anything workshop worthy, you know?
I did one workshop about 8 years ago and I'm still sweating.
Well, I like the approach that you're taking with your screencast, where you're taking like a specific kind of thing and then you're like, you're building it and you're like, this is the way I would build it. And then here's some other ways that I could you know, accomplish the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I don't know, I just like kind of your mindset or thinking behind, you know, how you're kind of stumbling through different, you know, like, oh, I could do it this way. Oh, this isn't working. But like, you know, I know that these tools exist. And so, I don't know. I know there's something there, Chris. I know there's something there.
I know what you mean. I wonder if like piecing smaller bits all, because, you know, the building a game thing is like, that's what's intimidating. Because it's like, not only is that you need to build and build and build and build and build, and then at the end you have a game. To be perfectly honest, my brain sometimes like loses interest in that. Or like you can't jump to video 9 because in video 7 they did all the asset management or something. So you kind of go watch it in order. I think most people do prefer that.
Well,
because then the end product is so cool. Whereas I'm like, I wonder.
That definitely doesn't apply to all courses. So we have like 3 different styles, and I don't want to get into it too deeply, but there is the build an entire app over a day approach where that's what you're talking about. You can't jump in towards the middle or the end. But there are like componentized courses. Like for instance, we did complete intro to React in the build an app style, but then we did intermediate React in the componentized world where you start from the same code base. You add, you know, you add a CSS library, whatever, or you reset, and then you add TypeScript, and then you reset, and then you add unit testing, and then you reset. And so like each part of the course is its own like module that you can just take that module. And so there are different approaches where it doesn't have to build on, you know, prior knowledge throughout the entire course. There are courses that are just a series of here's something that you can do, here's something that you can do, here's something that you can do, but it's just kind of under a collection. And so that's probably the approach that you should take is you know, having these kind of micro examples that kind of, if you look at, zoom out and look at all of them, like they kind of encompass a specific larger area. But, you know, each individual module is a little bit different.
Yeah, that's definitely how I think, so. That might work. Might just work.
Might just work. Well, we gotta do it. Gotta do it.
Yeah. Don't worry. Okay, Dave, do you have any final words here?
No, I think that's great. I think thanks for coming on. You know, especially in this new normal and all that, like learning online is kind of the only way you can do it. And I appreciate like you sharing your perspective on all this. It's really helpful, and hopefully people kind of get ideas and get inspired to pick something up if obviously they have the ability. But Mark, I guess for people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
Well, yeah, twitter.com/frontendmasters is everything about the business, and then twitter.com/1MARC is my Twitter, which is becoming more infrequent as I focus more and more on the business and the team and whatever. But I don't know. I might experiment with some like VR streaming. That's kind of what I've been into lately, is virtual reality, and maybe I'll do some streaming there. So yeah, you can follow me there.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to start our favorite and upline. That's how people find out about this show. Follow us on Twitter @ShopTalkShow for tens of tweets a month. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
No, shoptalkshow.com.